Shalom. We're in chapter 67 of the Rav Kook's commentary on the Agarita of Masechet Shabbat. And the Gemara says, Daf Yud Gimel, page 13. We saw it last week, we'll just go through it again. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Baram, Zachor Ha'isha Hu Letov V'Chananya Ben Chizkiya Shmo. As we saw last week, Rav Kook explains why does the Gemara also bless the man and also his name. She'ulmalehu nignaz sefer Yechezkel. Were it not for him, the book of Ezekiel would have been shelved. Would not have been canonized, would not have gone into the Bible, into the Tanakh. Shayud varav sotrin divrei Torah. Because there are certain things in the book of Yechezkel which apparently at first glance contradict the Torah. Ma'asa, so what did Hananya ben Chizkiah do? He'elum lo shalosh mod garvei shemen. They brought up 300 flasks of oil up into the attic. V'yashav ba'aliyah v'darshan. And he explained all of the apparent contradictions that are found in the book of Yechezkel.
Is that the original source of the expression burning midnight oil?
No. Rashi brings down a couple of sources. Divrei Torah. Kagon nevela utreifa v'gomer. Lo yochlu akohanim. That it says in the book of Yechezkel that Kohanim, the priests, are not allowed to eat non-slaughtered animals. Ha Yisrael ochlin? Rashi says, asks rhetorically, are Israel who are not Kohanim, they're allowed to eat non-slaughtered animals? That's a question, an apparent contradiction. The Kagon, another example. V'chin ta'aseh b'shiva b'chodesh. On the seventh day of Nisan, the book of Yechezkel mentions a certain sacrifice that was brought. Rashi points out, Heichan nirmaz korbanza batorah. Where have we seen the sacrifice on the seventh day of Nisan? And there are other issues as well regarding the midot, the measurements of the Beit HaMikdash, the future Beit HaMikdash. And Rav Kook explains as follows. First of all, We'll ask milchatchila, already from the start, what are the obvious questions? Number one, if a book deserved to be censored, so censor it. If a book does not belong in the Tanakh, so it shouldn't be in Tanakh. Why do we work so hard to keep it in the Tanakh? And maybe it shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Well, how does he know that it's worth saving?
Okay, well, we know that it's a book of prophecy, so we know that it's worth saving. But the question is, there are a lot of prophecies which are not written in Tanakh. Right? In the Gemara, Masechet Megillah, says, only nevuah she'nitztavu ledorot, only prophecies which can help us in future generations, those are the only prophecies which are written in the Tanakh. There were thousands of prophets in the time of Elisha, in the time of Eliyahu, and they're not written in the Tanakh. Another obvious question that we're going to have to deal with is if Hananya ben Chizkiah is going to doresh these,
to explain
these psukim, not according to their literal meaning, why did Yechezkel write them the way he wanted to write them? Whereas if you want to write them in a confusing way, that's not a very, very smart.
But that's always a question of all kinds of things in Tanakh.
True. The question is asked, isn't that a question on many things in Tanakh? That it could say, pay damages if you knock out somebody's tooth or eye instead of eye and ayin tachat ayin. That is a question which is asked, an eye for an eye. That's a question which is you can ask a lot. And Rav Kook is going to deal with that famous question here. Yesod HaTorah hu shanevuah lo tichadesh shum davar b'hora'ah. We know that one of the basic ground rules of the Torah is that prophecy will not change anything halakha l'ma'aseh, as opposed to
a later prophecy after Moshe.
Right. Moses was the highest of all prophets. We all know the Rambam includes that as one of the 13 principles of faith, because otherwise, theoretically, you could have a greater prophet who would come along and say, no, you don't have to do this anymore. Something along the lines of what Yeshu did in what they call the New Testament.
And Muhammad.
Yeah. So how do we know?
It's the only legislative prophecy.
Yeah. So we have this klal, the general rule, that prophets cannot change the Torah, cannot change the written law. Kimvuar b'Rambam b'ilchot Yesodei HaTorah, as the Rambam mentions in the laws of Yesodei HaTorah, the foundations of the Torah, in chapter 9, umnam, nevertheless, and here's the big nevertheless, koach beitin hu yafeh lechadesh v'lidrosh b'Torah. The job of a beitin, any beitin, is to learn out new ideas from the Torah. Kol beitin lefi avanato. Every beitin, according to its capability, ve'en lecha ela beitin shebiyamecha. And this is how Rav Kook is explaining the Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, that every person has to follow the rabbinical law of his day, of his generation, and the rabbis have the ability and the permission, and that's part of their job, to learn out and deduce things from the Torah. Now, what we're going to see is there is, b'chol zot, a difference between the great Sanhedrin and a smaller Beit Din today, for example. Uchashi Yisrael him al mechunam. When Am Yisrael, the people of Israel, are in our proper natural situation. Ubeit Din agadol yoshev b'makom asher yivchar Hashem. And we have the Sanhedrin sitting in Jerusalem. Notice the idea of having the legal court system in the national capital isn't just to stress that Judaism is also a nation and also a religion, that we have a national and religious capital that go together, but also it's the idea that, as the rabbis say, that the Shekhinah, the divine providence, the divine presence which rests in Yerushalayim, in the Beit HaMikdash, in the Holy Temple, also is going to positive influence and guide and rest upon the Sanhedrin, the rabbis who are on that high board, which unfortunately we don't have today. The Sanhedrin can only be when we're in the land of Israel. We don't have time to get into exactly how to restart the Sanhedrin, but Rav Kook dealt with it a lot. In all the different directions. On the one hand, he writes in many places that we have to try, we have to attempt to restart the Sanhedrin. Rav Maimon, one of the founders of the State of Israel, and one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence, a very, very big Talmid Chacham, very big scholar, He considered himself a student of Rav Kook, and he wrote an entire book, which I have here, on how to restart, how we will be able to restart the Sanhedrin. Right, now that we're back in the land of Israel, and we have a Jewish state, that Jewish state should and will eventually be run according to halacha. And that's exactly where we're at in Jewish history. We spoke about that once. So the Gemara Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Zayin, says that the order of the brachot, of the blessings in the Shmona Asrei, from the ninth bracha on, are according to the order of the redemption, where the ninth bracha is Barech Aleinu, that the land of Israel should give its fruit, in honor of Tisha B'Av, of Tu B'Shvat. Tu B'Shvat will show the...
Tisha B'Av will be a chag also.
Bezrat Hashem, the fruit of the land. The second stage of Geula is the next bracha, Tikah B'Shofar, to ingather the exiles back to the land of Israel. And the next bracha, which is the next stage of redemption, is Hashiva Shofteinu K'Varishona, that the Jewish state, which will rise with the ingathering of the exiles, will become religious and will run according to halacha. How is that going to be? So, first of all, Rav Kook writes in one of his letters, it's interesting, this is classic Rav Kook, where, as a genius, he sees both sides of the issue, but he does not exempt himself. He doesn't say, okay, let's just keep the status quo. We have to try and change the situation to be the ideal, Nevertheless, we realize that as long as God doesn't want there to be a Sanhedrin, that is His will. As Rav Tzvi Yehuda used to say, in the name of Rav Kook, that the b'di'eved of man is the lechatchila of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mentioned that to somebody this morning, and he stopped for a second and he thought, that's ingenious. And there really are so many ramifications of that idea, that what seems to man to be second best and not the best situation, if it was dictated by God, apparently that for God is really the best situation for where we're at now. So in that famous Igaret 20, I believe it is, where Rav Kook says that God does not want man to return to Torah because he's scared of lashes or getting killed by the Sanhedrin. That is not the coercion that we're interested today in the modern world, and God obviously isn't interested, and that's why it's not in our better interest, at least today, to have a Sanhedrin. It's better that we don't have a Sanhedrin today. Together with that, Rav Kook founded the chief rabbinate as the first stage of the Sanhedrin, and that's why there are 23 members of the Board of Rabbis. A lot has been written on the topic. Just to halachically, the way what Rav Maimon, it's based on the Rambam, says that if most of the Jews in the land of Israel could, and that's a big if, could agree on one Gadol Ador, one great Torah halachic scholar, then he would, through the power of the nation of Israel, be given smicha, be given that special ordination, and then he could in turn give ordination to other rabbis who, until you hit 71, who he believes are also fitting. And even though it sounds crazy, you know, how could all of the Jews ever agree on any one rabbi, I think that Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach was very close to it. Rav Moshe Feinstein was accepted by all the chugim. You know, obviously there's going to be some Hasidim who always think that their Rebbe is the Gadol Ador and nobody else, you know, and they think that part of praising their Rebbe is to put down other Rebbeim. We know this phenomena. But anyway, so that's the idea of restarting the Sanhedrin. So that, Rav Kook says, when we return to our normal situation, which again is not theoretical, we see it's the first two stages are taking place, so there's no reason to believe that the next stage is far behind. Also, we see the big Baal Tshuva movement, the famous Avichai survey that the whole country is talking about, that more than 80% of the country believes in God and are either religious or traditional, and the fact that it's already 3 years
that leftists from Haaretz went and said that the problem was not religious coercion, as they've always said, but it's because people are so religious. In other words, they want it that way.
Yeah.
That's the problem, according to that leftist.
We have to change the country. Change the people.
Right.
Anyway, no, left. Anyway, continues Rav Kook. Ukhashisraelim al mechunamu betin agadol yoshev b'makom asher yivchar Hashem, again stressing that the Sanhedrin is connected with hashkacha pratit, with God's wisdom. Az ein tsarich l'shum chatima v'amshacha le'eza hora'a kvua midorot she'avaru. The Sanhedrin does not need to rely on the psakim of previous generations. Ki im bedvarim shem kabbalot brurot halacha l'moshe mi'sinai. Only things which are clear Jewish traditions, which are passed on from generation to generation, things like the straps of the tefillin have to be black and that they have to be square, and most of the drashot, many of the drashot, which do have the halacha of Deoraita, the Sanhedrin can change. The Sanhedrin has the power to re-doresh, to re-deduce the psukim in the Tanakh. Aval kol ra'ot mesupakot tzrichot hen leichatech al pi beit din agadol. But this is not the job of every Tom, Dick, and Harry, and it's not even the job of the rabbi in your community. It's not even the job of a small Sanhedrin. The idea of learning out halachot and deducing Kabed et avicha ve'et imecha comes to teach us that extra word there is to teach us that we have to respect our older brother. That is the type of drasha which the Sanhedrin can change.
Who knows if in the difference in relationship between men and women we might not have some changes in the laws of Talmud Torah,
yeah,
and things like that.
Yeah, but Kavanah, don't want to start thinking of examples, because A, we'll get totally off our topic. B, it's, you know, like I said, that is exactly not our job. That's
exactly
the job of a very select few.
Totally
on the other end, without a doubt, they will deal with certain aspects regarding the place of women in Judaism, regarding certain brachot, regarding kitniot on Pesach or things like that. That's exactly the job. Now, kitniot on Pesach is midrabanan.
It's not even midrabanan.
It's a custom.
But
we're talking about really major changes in Judaism. I once was in a shiur with a famous Rosh Hashiva, and he mentioned that this is the way he sees it, the way of solving many of the halachic problems which arise today. But he says, the only thing that is lacking is a gadol ador to say it. And I raised my hand and I mentioned that Rav Kook writes it in one of his letters to Rav Alexandrov, the famous Rav Alexandrov, who was very controversial, a rabbi, big Talmid Chacham, that very controversial in Rav Kook's time. And some of the longest and most complicated letters are Rav Kook's answers to this Rav Alexandrov, and as well as here, where Rav Kook says explicitly what this Rav wanted to find a source that it says, and here he has the guts to say it. And you have to appreciate, you need very big shoulders to be able to say such a thing. Rav Kook knew that he had the authority, he knew that he had the respect of the people, and he had the guts to say this idea, which is a very, very big, big chidush.
Okay, what did I miss?
The chidush is to rededuce the drashot which we find in the Gemara.
I thought
Midrash Halakha,
I thought that was known that the Sanhedrin could do it, but the thing is, we just don't have the Sanhedrin, so everybody says, well, forget it.
In general, I think if you'd ask most learned people, they would say, well, you know, what's done is done, and that's the first story and the second story, and what the Sanhedrin can do, or what later rabbis can do, is rabbinical things, and gzerot, and takanot, and hora'at sha'ah, like temporary changes or special injunctions, and it takes a lot of guts to change the first couple of floors.
Well, there is a thing that the Beit Din cannot go against something previously decreed unless they are greater in stature and number.
Okay, and that's a very good question. And Rav Kook obviously knows that there is a difference of opinion how to explain that Rambam in Hilchot Mamrim and in several places in the Gemara, where it talks about that you cannot change previous decisions of previous Sanhedrin unless you're greater in number and wisdom. And there are a lot of different opinions of what exactly that means to be greater in number and greater in wisdom. One of the opinions of why there are 120 members of Anshei Knesset Agdolah during the time of the Second Beit HaMikdash was in order to solve that problem, that they would be greater in number than the 71 which were always there in the previous...
But were they greater in wisdom?
That's difference of opinion, how you measure greatness and wisdom. One opinion is, I think it's the Ravid, who says that you see how many students that they have. There are a lot of different explanations.
So, just for clarity, can you just say, we said there are certain things which cannot be overturned.
Yeah.
And certain things which can be reinterpreted. A deraita can be reinterpreted by a Beit Din, and then a drasha midoraita can be reinterpreted according to the needs of the generation, or according to the
understanding of the generation.
So,
right.
Where do we draw that line? What are the things that can't be overturned? Is it just halacha l'moshe l'misinai, or
what is a pre-etz hadar? right? The fact that the beautiful fruit that we take on Sukkot is always going to be an etrog. The Shlosh Esrei Midot, how we learn out Gzeirah Shavah is always going to be accepted. Kal v'chomer is always going to be accepted. How to learn things out is always going to be accepted. But you have to remember, anybody who learns, every year I take a project to learn from birthday to birthday. And my project this year is to concentrate on Midrash Halacha, Michilta, Sifra, and Sifri. And there are really a lot of things which, until you learn it, and really most people don't learn those Midrash Halacha. You know, B'mikre HaTov, people learn Gemara and Mishnah. But until you learn the Midrash Halacha, you don't realize how many of the things that we usually take for granted as given are not really simple. That there is a lot of machloka regarding very basic issues, which today we follow the Shulchan Aruch, right? That's for obvious reasons. That is the ground rules that we work with. Nevertheless, there's a lot of flexibility.
The Netziv did support them.
Sometimes.
Is he saying that the Sanhedrin has the ability to do it, or they must do it? Is he taking a step further and saying they have to make some changes?
Changes regarding Gzerot and Takanot, without a doubt. That we mentioned, I'm not going to go over it again, but if you want to see it in Otsrot Re'iya, on page 932 and 933, where Rav Kook talks about that a large percentage of the questions and difficulty and things which seem to be illogical in Halacha are simply because we don't have the Sanhedrin, we don't have this rabbinic body to change it. But they definitely will be changed. So that's definitely going to regarding rabbinic gezerot and takanot, that's simple. The chidush here is also regarding prophecies. All right, let's remember what we're talking about. Yechezkel was a prophet. Ezekiel was a prophet. And the question is how to understand and interpret his prophecies. Rav Kook is going to say different generations are meant to explain it in different ways. And that is the beauty of the oral law. The written law is given to many interpretations. Like we once gave the example here, or I brought in there are pictures, famous picture of where if you look from one angle, it looks like an old woman, and if you look from another angle, it looks like a young woman, right? And if you ask which of the two did the artist have in mind, without a doubt, he had both. The same thing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu consciously left a lot, the Torah, Shebichtav, the written law, in a way that it needs the oral law to be interpreted according to the ways of the time. But let's go on to see exactly how it's done.
That's the whole idea of creation. That's the idea of Brit Milah. That's all the way through the Torah.
Exactly. Man is supposed to be a partner with God. That's like Yeshua points out. That's the idea of circumcision, that God creates the body and we're meant to complete it. Asher bara Elokim la'asot. But let's go on. Ulifamim. Haya beitin echad dorish betorah umaale al pi darshotav horaot chadashot. And sometimes the beitin, it wasn't something that they would do every day, maybe not even every year, but when there was a need, they would al pi darshotav horaot chadashot darshen out, deduce out from the text in the written law new teachings. And that's also considered Divrei Torah. Shekach hunach be'etzem haTorah al pi haChokhma Elyona. This is the basis of the written law, that it is meant to be reinterpreted in every generation. Shetia nidreshet al pi, and notice, based on what four aspects? Number one, al pi darkei Torah. There are certain ground rules, like we said before, Gzeirah Shavah, Kal V'chomer, deducing if A, then B, a common word which is mentioned in several places. Those are givens. B'tziruf hashpa'at ha-seichel, number two, their intellect. The personal IQ of each member of the Sanhedrin, he has an obligation to use that intellect which God gave him to say how he understands the psukim. Number three, haskamat habetin. We're not talking about one individual. We're talking about the 71 greatest gedolei ador. Everybody knows they're the gedolei ador. The biggest mumchim in every halachic field under the sun, and they have to vote, argue it out, and in the end they vote on it. And that vote obligates everyone. Otherwise it really would be anarchy, right? And number four, shebayamim hahem, that they take into account the mindset of the generation, the needs of the generation, and they apply it to the eternal Torah. Vine, hanivua, regarding prophecy, we all know that you're not allowed to paskin halacha based on prophecy. The famous Gemara of the Tanur Shalachnai, where Rabbi Eliezer says, well, if I'm right, may the wall fall, and the wall falls. And if I'm right, may the tree fall, and the tree falls. And if I'm right, may the river flow backwards, and it does. And still the rabbis say, no, we're the majority. Lo bashamayim hi. God might be on your side, but God doesn't have a vote.
The Bat Kol agrees.
And the Bat Kol says, Nitzchuni banai. Okay, so that, by the way, it's interesting, Rav Kook, in many places, there's actually a whole sefer written by Professor Nerya Gutel on the effect that Rav Kook, as opposed to most other poskim, does give halachic clout to a certain extent to Ruach HaKodesh. And for example, he cites the Talmud Yerushalmi, which says that why is the halacha like Beit Hillel and not like Beit Shammai? In the Talmud Bavli it says because Beit Hillel was the majority. You go by the majority. In the Talmud Yerushalmi it says a bat kol, a voice came out from heaven and said halacha ke Beit Hillel. What is the difference? Because the Talmud Bavli was written in Babylon, where there is no prophecy. The Talmud Yerushalmi, the Israel Talmud, was written in the land of Israel. And God does intervene more in the land of Israel.
Does that mean that the Yerushalmi there it disagrees with the position established in the Gemara about the Tanur Shalom?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Aval hatz. It's a question, but it doesn't. Aval tzfiya mesura la. Okay, the tzipia, the power of looking, a vision, that is the job of prophecy. Looking ahead. Notice what Rav Kook is talking about. Looking ahead. Imken, lifamim yireh hanavi ma sheyeh b'acharit hayamim. The prophet will see that which will take place even in the end of days, thousands of years from his time. She'atid beit adin ha'gadol lidrosh b'torah ez ha'orot mechudashot. This is where Rav Kook is going. Yechezkel, when Yechezkel gave his prophecy, he knew very well his prophecy is eternal and is and will and is meant to be reinterpreted at different generations in different ways. And all of them were in mind when God gave him that prophecy. Shelefi adrachim amuskamim biadenu hem nir'im kesotrim divrei Torah. If you look at our logic today, and the way the Sanhedrin interprets it today, some of the things in Yechezkel seem to contradict words in the Torah. Aval advarim itgalu me'omka shel Torah b'sha'atam. The day will come where those difficult psukim may very well be interpreted differently. And what seems to you to be a contradicting today, because the lifestyle that we live today, and the technology of today, and the mindset of today, in 1,000 or 2,000 or 1,000,000 years from now, it might be reinterpreted. One thing is for sure, that the prophecy is forever. And that's why the idea of shelving something which was in the Tanakh doesn't come into account. That idea cannot be taken into account. Why are they discussing the difficulties? It contradicts the Torah. And this rabbi goes up to the attic to try and figure out the contradictions. The point is, that is his job in every generation.
Is it that the words of Yechezkel that appear to contradict the Torah, in the future his words will be reinterpreted so as not to contradict the Torah, or is it in the future the Torah will be reinterpreted so that Yechezkel's words will contradict them?
It seems like the latter is more what we're talking about.
Both are very possible. Rav Kook in his letter to Rav Alexandrov talks about the first also, of changing the interpretations of the Torah itself. But you're right, from the context here is talking about understanding the prophecy. But were I not to know the... he might even say it Bem Sheikh here. Yeah.
We have a principle that the Torah is eternal and applies in every generation. Obviously, it needs to be interpreted appropriately.
Right.
Does that not hold true also for the Navi? In other words, we say at the moment the Navi, it seems to be, can have can contradict the Torah in this generation, but it will be interpreted later down the line. Should it not be possible to interpret it without contradiction in every generation?
It definitely has to be interpreted in a way that doesn't contradict the Torah in every generation. But the question is, why was it written that way in the first place? Why not just write it in a clear way possible? The answer is, the Torah is flexible. That's the beauty of a godly Torah that is eternal. And we've spoken about this many times, that the Torah also had to apply in a generation where there were slaves, and there was no surrogate mothers or artificial insemination in any of those. And it also has to apply in a world of technology where mankind, with the help of the Torah, already comes to a level of morality that, no, we don't want slaves anymore. And the Torah has to apply here and here and here and here. And also in a million years from now.
See, that's true for the Nebuah as well. Like, even though we said right here that the Navi sees the Ketzi Yamim and gives a prophecy which is relevant, nevertheless, that prophecy also has to be relevant, or the words of the prophet have to be at least not contradicting the Torah, if understood properly, even in a generation which has not got to Ketzi Yamim, which he was...
And that's the job of the Rabbanim, to make sure that everything is understandable and applicable.
In each generation.
Yeah. Alken, ha-nevuah ta'aseh et shila. Prophecy has to do its role. Ta'arich dvarea ki yad Hashem aleha. It is going to be worded and has to be produced, has to be presented by the prophet in the most eternal style possible. Aval adorot kol zman shel. By the way, my educated guess here is that in the famous machloka between the Malbim and the Abarbanel, whether God gave the general idea to the prophet and the prophet put it in his own words, that's the opinion of the Abarbanel, as opposed to the Malbim, who says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu dictated word for word to the prophet. Rav Kook doesn't relate to it explicitly, but I think that he tends to lean in the direction of the Malbim, because every word has to be eternal. Aval hadorot kol zman shelo ba'u lemidazu. But as long as the generations have not come to this level, enam yecholim la'atim ele hadvarim im divrei Torah v'anvuah halo enam machrat. Right? If you find things that contradict between the Torah and prophecy, and we don't have a Sanhedrin, prophecy does not overtake the Torah. And the prophecy is the one that has to be changed to fit in line with the Torah. Al ken tzarich ha-sefer ha-nevuyahu lefi zeh lihiganez. And that's why, at a certain stage, they thought to stop learning Yechezkel, to take it out of the Tanakh. And again, here Rav Kook is basically answering Avi's question, that there is a time where we can't, when we don't have a Sanhedrin, we really can't redarshan the Torah. So what do we do then? We redarshan the prophecy, the Navi, the Yechezkel. Emet ha-davar sh'anu ma'minim u'makirim she'pu'ulato retzuya. We know, we recognize that the action, the original action, the original words of the prophet, obviously, are proper. Avarak li'itim rechokot kishyagi adavar bapual. But only when the time will come, maybe in many, many years from now, from the time where the prophet said what he did, shall pibetin yachtoch adavar yedei mashim tzu darke adrisha shalem b'torah mechuvanim lezeh. And therefore, at certain stages, certain passages in the prophet might seem to be difficult and have to be dealt with Omnam, kedei la'ashir ha-sefer imanu, in order to keep the book with us, in order not to take it out of the Tanakh, tzarich la'alot eze ish lima'ala. Here, Rav Kook is referring to the symbolic idea that Rabbi Hananya ben Chizkiah went up to the attic. He had to rise above his generation. Through his great thinking, with the help of God, in his wisdom, giving Ruach HaKodesh is like a lower level than prophecy, but it's still divine thought. To make sense out of the psukim, which really were mainly meant for the time of Mashiach, but to make sense out of them already today. And this is like, very often, many geniuses are ahead of their time. And especially if they have Ruach HaKodesh, they have the help of God, they really are ahead of their time. They can rise up to understand things in a different way than different generations.
Prophecy is designed to be understood differently and appropriately. There's a verse in Tehillim that says, Achat diber Hashem shtayim zo shamati ki oz leilukim.
Right. Val piyam yakir darkei anavi, vinam hochim b'mesilat haTorah. This goes in the path of God. That's exactly what God had in mind. V'ze asa Hananya. They brought up 300 flasks of oil. As Rashi explains, oil to cook, oil to eat, oil to light the lamp, to learn at night, day and night. Hashemin more ala chokhmah ha'elokit. Rav Kook adds that oil symbolizes the wisdom of God. That is the menorah. In the Beit HaMikdash, the candelabrum symbolizes the Torah, the light, the warmth, the wisdom, the calm, the comfort. Al ken nivchar shemen l'mishcha lot kodesh v'yitron koach kedusha. The Chazal tell us that somebody who drinks olive oil, it is good for your wisdom. The Gemara tells us that somebody who eats olives, it's bad for the memory, but olive oil is good. And the Yavetz and others, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld has a tshuva on it, says that if the best thing to do, what Chazal have in mind, is to put a little oil on the olives before you eat them. Yeah. And so olive symbolizes wisdom. Also to this day, when a person in the cartoons gets a good idea, they draw a light bulb. Right? The light bulb in the olden days was the olive oil, the lamp. Lorot sheyitale kan b'mechkaro, to show that he had to rise up in the wisdom of his learning. Lo lefi amida ma'asit amidbonenet rak al pi sechel ha'pashut ha'enoshi. He couldn't just make do with regular wisdom of regular people. Ki im yashved rachav l'orchot ha'kodesh shel ha'chokhmah ha'elohit. He had to be on the same wavelength of the godly wavelength. Even though in his time, the time of Rabbi Hananya ben Chizkiah, who set out on this difficult task, there was no prophecy. Nevertheless, that's where he tried to go. He tried to tune in to that eternal way of understanding the psukim and applying it to his generation. V'yashav ba'aliyah, he sat in the attic, lahorot shu amnam mit'ale b'darko ze, mipnei dorot halalu, v'shadvarim elu einam ne'marim lema'ase le'et kazot. Right, the idea of rising above his world. Everyone's on the first floor. He knows that the main issue of the prophecy was written for a later generation, a higher generation. I just thought of an example just now. Whenever you learn Nevi'im Achronim, mainly Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, Yechezkel, who talk about Yemot HaMashiach. Anybody who reads them today in the modern concept of modern technology, and we've seen how Kibbutz Galiot has come to be, and you see things in such a different way than anybody would have imagined if you read those exact same psukim 200 years ago. So what were we supposed to do? For 2,000 years before Kibbutz Goliot, it had to be in Tanas. What were we supposed to do? Every generation understood it in different ways. The Darshan. What he did was he was deduced these psukim. V'chevan shedarshan kvar etziv lanu derech slula la'atim b'chlalot divrei hanvua im yesod divrei Torah. U'v'ze hinenu yecholim kvar gam anu l'ishtamesh b'oro b'torat limud. So that we could also benefit from the light of the Torah of Hananiah ben Chizkiah to learn Yechezkel in a way that is applicable to our generation, or to his generation. Me'achar sheyadanu sheleolam lo tihya nevuah machrat et Torah ma'asit, kim yesh bat tzipiyah l'raglei inyana. So how could this one rabbi, he's not on the Sanhedrin, he's not the Sanhedrin, how could one rabbi darshan things in a... The answer is, he's not changing halachot. He is doing darshanut. He's not changing even one halacha, one practical law.
Does that mean, if I understood it correctly, that since he was able to resolve the apparent contradictions between Yechezkel and the Torah in his generation, so that it would then be acceptable to include it in the Tanakh, so it could preserve it for the appropriate generation, which could then understand the full meaning?
The
meaning that he intended for the different generation.
The idea of eternity, the eternity of the Torah, is that every generation is going to add on. There's a beautiful term. The Rashbam says that he was talking with his grandfather Rashi about Rashi as the classic commentary on the Torah. So the Rashbam, he said, I mentioned to him some of my chidushim, and my grandfather Rashi enjoyed them very much, and he admitted that if he had the time, he would write a new commentary al pshatot hamitchadshot b'chol yom, on the new commentaries which appear every single... Now if this is in his day, and Sacha called, the difference between him and his grandson isn't all that many years. Nevertheless, they see things... What would he say today? That we have the foresight of archaeology, and dikduk is a lot more, the Hebrew language is a lot more exact, and minusach is formulated now, and not to mention, like I said, all of the prophecies about Kibbutz Goliot and the Messianic Day, we see how they're coming true, and we saw some of the commentaries may have understood it correctly. Some in their time, it was good that they explained it that way. Okay, that's tzfiya mita'emet al pi darkei adrisha shiye likav lebeit din agadol shiye la'atid biyom sheyashuvu lanu kol chemdotenu ha'aretz v'amikdash hanevuah v'amemshala. This direction of explaining the prophecies for your generation and for later generations, every generation will need, when we will return to our beloved situation, when we will come back to the land of Israel and have the temple and have prophecy and have a state, an independent Jewish state. V'aleihem beit din agadol b'makom asher yivchar Hashem, and above them all, the Sanhedrin, sitting on the place which God chooses on the Temple Mount in Yerushalayim, shemisham Torah yotzeit lechol Yisrael. As the Yeshayahu says, that all of the world is going to come and to learn from the Torah that comes out from Jerusalem. What is Jerusalem? The Sanhedrin. What is the Torah that's going to... How are we learning Torah today? Rav Kook is explaining, the Torah of then is going to be a little different. Omnam, rak ba'aliyah, only in the attic, on the second floor, biyoto mitromem me'al ha'matzav ha'oveh, when he rose above the present situation, the present generation, u'mit'ale le'matzav haram ha'atid, when he tunes into the wavelength of Yemot HaMashiach, of what Yechezkel had really in mind, Yachol Hayad Lidrosh Bitzfono V'Nizgavot Kmo Eleh, and rise above what seemed in his time to be contradictory. By the way, that's also an interesting phenomena. What is it? All of a sudden in his day it seems to be contradictory? Nobody knows the contradictions 100 years or 200 or 1,000 years beforehand? Yechezkel was way before him. The answer is that apparently in his time, it didn't contradict. maybe according to their understanding, wasn't that a problem. For whatever reason, at a certain stage, it's starting becoming problematic. That is the job of the rabbis and their generation, to raise it up to a more eternal level.
Wasn't it that he was in the generation where they decided, like, when they finalized what's going to be in the Tanakh and what's going to be outside the Tanakh?
The Gemara says, Shil Malei Hu Nignaz Sefer Yechezkel. Yechezkel was there, and it was holy, right? It was written in Nevuah. But they thought of maybe putting it in the Gniza, of burying it. I just want to finish. Vayu ha'pulot shel knisat Hashem en harav ha'u ve'aliyah la'aliyah lechazik ha'rmizah liyesodot ha'chokhma she'al piv tivne ha'maracha shel ha'drisha ha'amuka ha'hi she'bevaday to'otzoteha hayu ramot v'nichbadot me'od. Yeah.
So do we need to conclude, or do we even know if Hananiah ben Chizkiah was in the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah?
He was a Tana, that I know. It was in the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah.
Anshei Knesset HaGdolah is like the very beginning of the Tanaim, right?
I
mean, if he was after...
I think not. I think he was later.
If he was later, then yeah. How could in his generation there have even been a Havamina of being Gonez Sefer Yechezkel if the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah had already decided not to?
If that's exactly the power of Rabbanim in every generation. The rabbis today, theoretically, if they would see there's a book in Tanakh which is problematic, they could say, we're going to stop learning it, we're going to stop teaching it.
Stop learning it, but take it out of the Tanakh?
But you have to remember, the idea of the Tanakh was not written as one printed Bible. It was Megillot, it was individual scrolls. So to have one scroll and bury it isn't as problematic as it would sound today.
Is it not that since the Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, fine, not one printed book, but since that time, though, that there was an idea that these books are in it, and everything else is out of it.
Nachon. My educated guess was that even if it would have been buried, they still would have known, everyone would know, there used to be another book in Tanakh that we don't learn anymore, or something along those lines. But thank God it didn't get to that.
Yeah.